Yes.
Introduction.
Yes, yes, yes. I know it's a long presentation, and we look forward to have you deliver it. So, anyways, welcome everybody here in the room as well as over the WebEx. It is our pleasure today to have Professor Warren Powell be our guest speaker. Professor Powell is with the Department of Operations Research and Financial Engineering at Princeton University, where he's been for the last 38 years. Professor Powell has done a lot of stuff in his illustrious career. I would like to only single out two major areas in which he's recognized as a leader. One is the area of stochastic programming, specifically develop models and algorithms for a multitude of applications such as energy systems, transportation, health, business analytics, and so on and so forth. The second area would be approximate dynamic programming, especially for applications in freight transportation. He has authored or co-authored an excess of 200 scientific papers. He has authored two books. One is called Approximate Dynamic Programming, Solving the Curse of Dimensionality, which is now in its second edition. The other book is called Optimal Learning. And I know there is a book in works called Optimization Under Uncertainty, a Unified Framework, which I believe is what his talk is going to preface. There is also a Tutorials and Operations Research article that kind of speaks a little bit about this as well. He has had extensive service at Informs, especially in the Transportation, Computing, and Optimization Societies there. He's in fact a fellow of Informs. He has won the 2009 Daniel Wagner Prize for Excellence in Operations Research Practice, and he has been twice the Franz Edelman Award finalist. He and his students have won numerous paper awards, and I guess I'm saving the best for last. Over his 38 years at Princeton, he has supervised 50 graduate students and postdocs, as well as supervised an excess of 200 undergraduate theses. So, Professor Powell, we're very excited to have you today. We look forward to your talk. The floor is yours.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to do this. So I'm going to talk a little long. So hold on a second. Okay, so I'm going to start with a little review of some applications I've worked on. One is a company called RoomSage.com. This is hotels looking for algorithmic help in things like pricing and revenue management. Here's an example of a problem where we're trying to fix a price, which could be for a room or for an ad click, and there's a downward sloping demand curve that I don't know. I'd like to charge prices to maximize revenue, it looks like right in the middle, but I don't learn anything if I do that. But I want to really learn the most about what the demand curve is. You want to do high and low prices. You want to do more at the endpoint. But then I don't make any money. So there's the trade-off. Health sciences, I've worked on, at the bottom, one of these applications is one where we're trying to do medical decisions customized for each patient. The top one was one on drug discovery, where we're trying to do experiments to fit a model that allow us to identify the drug that will do the best at killing cancer. These experiments are very expensive, so you really need to do efficient learning. Let's go to the transportation realm, Uber and Lyft, where we have to assign drivers to riders. We have a very high-dimensional problem, so one thing is this is like my problems in logistics. But at the same time, I still also have the problem of surge pricing, where I have to make the trade-off between higher prices get me more drivers but fewer passengers. That trade-off is uncertain. I have to learn it quickly. Storms. So we've got Hurricane Florence aiming at North Carolina. This was Hurricane Sandy that came up and hit New Jersey some years ago. We had to manage physical resources like utility trucks, but we also had to do things like figure out where are the outages. The utility doesn't know where lines are down. It depends on people calling and saying their lights are out. And saying where their lights are out still doesn't tell you where the trees are down. So once again, we have a physical resource management problem and a learning problem. I've worked on very high-dimensional energy problems of managing the grid. The interesting problem here is the lags of the decisions. Those nuclear power plants are planned a year in advance. The steam plants are planned a day in advance. Natural gas turbines might be an hour in advance. And the wind and solar working with the batteries in the middle, that's all very real time, just reacting to things as it happens. Now, of all the complicated problems I've worked on, this is one that has really attracted me. It's very small. It's astonishingly difficult. We get energy from wind, which also introduces the idea of dealing with forecasts. We can buy power from the grid. Now I have to deal with heavy-tailed prices. By the way, if everybody could mute, did everybody mute their phones? There's some background noise. I really need everybody to mute. Okay. And then I also have to serve a demand, which is very time-dependent, not as noisy, but the time dependencies create a new complication, and all I have to smooth all this is a battery. Of course, it's probably a bigger battery than a car battery. But this is still quite hard. Now, if I want to model any of these, if I want to put any of these on the computer, I have to model them. And so modeling means taking a real-world problem and translating it to mathematics to get it into the computer. Now, this is the hardest thing. This is what hasn't been done. If we go to deterministic optimization, everybody, at least in operations research, speaks this language. We all know min cx sub to ax equals b. We've been speaking it for 50, 60, 70 years. Papers from around the world all speak this language. But wait until we put a random variable in here. As soon as you come in and try to introduce some uncertainty, you enter what I've been calling the jungle of stochastic optimization. And every one of these terms is a field. It's a discipline where people deal with decisions under uncertainty. And behind every one of these fields is at least one book and sometimes several books. Every one of these books, you could spend a whole PhD. I know people spend entire academic careers in one of these books. The problem with every one of these books, including mine, by the way, I'm going to make one more request. Could everybody please try to mute? I really need everybody to try to mute. Okay, there's some background noise that I'm struggling with here. Okay, including the two books of mine on approximate dynamic programming and optimal learning. Each one of these, think of it as a hammer looking for a nail, but the hammer's not a very big hammer. And you can take a problem with the technique work. Give me a minute with your problem, and I'll make your technique not work anymore. It's all got a very narrow footprint. So what I'm going to do is start off by giving you an overview of how to model the dynamic program model, and then I'll talk about different dimensions. I don't know if the host could help me with somebody's not getting the message of muting.
Yes, can we have everybody anyway, on the phone please mute? Because we have return. Please go on, Professor.
Okay. So it turns out every single one of these problems, any sequential decision problem with uncertainty, breaks down into five core components: state variables, decisions, exogenous information, transition function, objective function. These are the five core elements, and I'm going to use this as a foundation. Let me walk through these somewhat quickly. So states. So there's two vocabularies people use for states. The controls community, which is quite large, likes to use X for state. Finance people use control notation. The rest of us in operations research, we like to use S for state. And my own personal notation is to say, you know, there's always seems to be three types of state variables. Physical states like inventory or what node the vehicle is at or where you are in a network. I'll call it just other information. I don't like this word. I haven't been able to figure out something better like prices and weather. And the last one's a little tricky and subtle. It's the belief state. Now, these are going to be the parameters of a distribution or probabilities that allow you to describe something that you don't know perfectly. Okay, this is your belief about something. There are problems that only have a belief state. There are problems that only have a resource state. There's problems that have everything. And so this now covers a very, very rich set of problems. By the way, the various books I showed you have an annoying habit of not defining a state variable. This is something where when you're talking to somebody and he uses the word state variable, ask them, do you know, what's your definition of a state variable? You'd be amazed at how many people don't have a quick answer. I keep attempting at a book. My ADP books have attempts at definitions. My newest book has this definition. Let me focus on the second version. A state variable is literally all the information you need and only the information you need to model your costs and profits and contributions, the constraints, and any information needed to model the evolution over time, the transition function. That's a state variable. Now, any properly modeled problem is Markovian. That's a controversial statement, but it's true. Anytime you have a model that's not Markovian, you haven't modeled it properly. Go back and put the other variables in, and then you have a state variable, and stop worrying about whether it's complicated. Decisions. There seem to be three notational systems for decisions. Discrete actions, widely used in Markov decision processes, completely adopted by the computer science community. Control theory, it's usually low-dimensional vectors. And operations research, we love X. And X can be anything. X can be high-dimensional, low-dimensional, binary. X can be all over the place. And I want to make sure that I'm not going to limit myself, because there are entire fields like reinforcement learning that are completely constrained to discrete X's, optimal stopping, 0, 1. The OR community doesn't even wake up until you get to 10,000 dimensions. So I don't care. I'm going to cover all of them. Exogenous information. Now, this is something where there is almost no standard notation. The controls people use little WT, which is still random at time T. I'm going to do capital WT. And capital WT is known at time T. And W is all the information that first became known at time T. Now, when you're modeling real problems, you can't call everything W. You're going to have resources and demands and prices and energy from wind. So I put hats on those to represent the exogenous information. This is all known at time T, and it first became known at time T. There will be other random variables, but this is the variables that drew their information from outside the system. Transition function. Now, this is a really simple concept, widely used in engineering. You almost never see it in the operations research community. This is the transition that give me a state, tell me a decision or action X. Now I observe the new information WT plus 1, and these are the equations to get me to the state ST plus 1. So I have to have an equation for every state. Some of these things were affected by a decision, others not. And so then the trickiest one is the objective function. And this is just a small snapshot, but this will cover the biggies. This is where we're going to optimize over policies. Now, I forgot to mention that when I introduce decisions, decisions are made by functions called policies. If your decision variable is X, your policies can be capital X, and I hang a superscript pi for policy. And that pi variable is what tells you what type of function and any tunable parameters. What I'm going to do here is I want to find the best policy, the best rule for making a decision. Now, I'll have a cost or contribution function, let's say contribution because I'm maximizing. It will depend on the state. It'll depend on the decision. It may also depend on, not always, the information that arrives in the next time period or iteration. And if I want the best policy, that I, because of the randomness, I'm going to have to maximize an expectation. Now, I may depend on accumulated costs and contribution that happen along the way, or I may want to design something in a computer, and I only care about the final design. We'll call that the final reward objective. The first is the cumulative reward. And the final reward, what I call a policy pi, other people might just call an algorithm, stochastic gradient algorithm, for example. And then we've got this issue of risk, and risk is kind of complicated. I'm not going to talk much other than to acknowledge, yeah, risk is more messy, but you're still maximizing over policies some risk metric. Risk might be, what is the highest cost? Or what is the sum of the cost squared? So you get some sort of nonlinear function. Now, this slide here is the universal framework. Here it is, one slide. You have an objective function that can come in different flavors. You have a transition function. You have the exogenous information, which captures the uncertainty. This one slide, you can model every single problem in any of those 15 books I showed you earlier. This is the universal framework. So the tricky thing, usually for most people, is, yeah, but how do you optimize over the policy pi? And this reminds me of what it must have been like to have been in the classroom when Kantorovich put up the first linear program back in the 1930s, where he minimized over X, and everybody went, how do you do that? So most of this talk is going to focus on how do you maximize over policies or minimize. okay? Because this is something where we don't have a cool algorithm like the simplex algorithm. Now, let me just talk very briefly, and this, by the way, is aimed mainly at people from industry or anybody working with industry. I spend a lot more time modeling. And when I sit down with a company often, and I have a real problem or a student with a problem they want to work on, first thing I do is go to the whiteboard and I write down these five headers. These are the five dimensions. Now, you don't go from left to right. It's a little more complicated. Often we're going to start with the objective. What do we want to do? What are our performance metrics? Then I'm going to turn around, and this is a little harder. What are the decisions? Now, there's problems where the decisions are obvious. Uber has to pick the right driver for a rider or pick the right surge price. And then there's a lot of problems where people actually haven't figured out. Opioid crisis, what's the decision? You know? Well, it turns out sometimes it's not that easy. Now, after you make a decision, you learn new things. You have to articulate those. So I'm going to list the state variable now, but I'm listing the state variable because the last thing we get to is the transition function. It is how the state variable evolves. Now, I just want to remember the state variable comes from three sources: information in the constraints for the decisions, information you need in the objective function, and information you need for the transition function. So when you go to create the state variable, that tends to be sort of an organic process. You sort of have to do your modeling, and along the way, you pick out the information that goes in the state. So let me just very briefly talk about the most important topic in sequential decisions, and that's uncertainty. And I'm going to give it one slide because it's way too important to give it five or six slides and then pretend that I've said anything. All I'm going to do here is to say, boy, uncertainty is unbelievably rich. Now, there's fields called uncertainty quantification. We have simulation communities that do stochastic modeling. You know, this getting the levels of uncertainty, getting the different sources of uncertainty is difficult. It's important. But if you're going to do anything with stochastic optimization, forget coming up with an optimal policy. It's not optimal if you didn't model it correctly. And anybody in industry really resonates with this. Chapter 10 of my new book is dedicated to uncertainty. By the way, I don't have any magical formula for this list. If anybody thinks that I missed something, let me know. I can send you the link to my book. It's on the Jungle website. I just sat and used all of my experience to come up with these. It's not a well-defined list. All right, so let's get to this issue of finding policies. First question I'll get all the time. What's a policy? A policy is a mapping of state to an action. Dot, 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 any mapping. There's a lot of confusion about this. People will often say, oh, a policy, and then in their mind, you know they're thinking of some simple form. It doesn't have to be. So the question is, we have this really arbitrary class of functions that map state to actions. How do we search this? Well, this is hard. So here's where I've started. First of all, I want you to know in the English language, the concept of a policy comes up in many ways. Every one of these words is the English language trying to communicate how we make decisions and guide behavior. So let's just understand this is incredibly rich. Now, it turns out there are two fundamental ways to create policies. This is not a mathematical proof to really make. So the second one is not one that people have heard. Cost function approximations. I stumbled into this. It has gotten almost no attention from the academic literature, but it's massively popular in industry. I'm going to come back to all of these and give real examples. So let me just go to the look-ahead class. So this, again, breaks into two groups. And the first group is where you're in a state and you take an action, and then after some random information, it takes you to a downstream state. And if I can have a function that tells me the value of being down in that downstream state, then I'm good, okay? I'm done. And if I can compute that expectation, I've got an optimal policy. This is what people recognize as Bellman's equation. So the hard problem is I generally can't compute the value functions, so usually I'm approximating this. So this is what they like to call approximate dynamic programming. And for a while, I thought I could conquer the world with this. I'm saying it here, you can't. So one thing that's problematic is that E, that expectation. So in some problems, many, but not all, you can finesse it by using something called the post-decision state, and that's good. We still have that issue with that value function, and I got to tell you, there's problems where I can do a great job coming up with the value function, and there's an awful lot of problems I just can't. OK? So the direct look ahead, again, I'm going to come back to all of these with examples. The direct look ahead, so I gave you this crazy equation. It's really messy and complicated. Trust me, you can't compute it, okay? It's extremely rare that you can compute that E max over pi, E of a sum. So the bottom line is where we approximate it. We create an approximate look ahead model. So I put tildes everywhere. I've indexed things by T and T prime because I'm making the decision at time T, but I'm looking forward to T prime, and that's an approximate look ahead. I'll just hint that one approximation is to look ahead deterministically, okay? But what I've just done is create four classes of policies. The first two classes are in the policy search class. These are the policy function approximations or PFAs, the cost function approximations, CFAs. The second two are in the look-ahead class where you have to find some way to approximate the downstream impact of a decision made now. Now, you have to understand what I'm claiming here. I'm claiming that these four policies are universal. In other words, anytime you're going to ever make a decision under uncertainty, you are going to use either one of these four classes or a hybrid, which means, so I'm pretty sure that everybody in this call, I love to do it in a room where I can ask everybody to raise their hand. How many of you make decisions? Okay, go ahead. We all make decisions. How many have to deal with uncertainty when you make decisions? Well, that's almost always, okay? So all of you, probably since the age of, I don't know, 3 or 4, have been making decisions under uncertainty. I mean, the first time your parents gave you something to eat, you didn't know how it's going to taste. You had to make a decision to eat it, and you had to deal with the uncertainty of how to taste it. Decisions of uncertainty is universal. So my claim that you're using one of these four classes means this is what you've been doing. Now, most of the time you're doing PFAs, but the look-aheads are very popular. But whatever you're doing, I claim, I don't have a proof of this, you're using one of the four classes. Now, the first two are in the policy search class, the second two in the look-ahead class. The first three all involve some type of functional approximation. Okay, a lot of machine learning here. The last three all involve an embedded optimization. Every one is an argmax or argmin. So these are each their own optimization problem, but this is just an embedded optimization to compute a decision to create a policy to solve a different optimization problem, which would be the true one. I call it the base model. Now, in all of this, there's a lot of machine learning going. So if you're saying, yeah, but I really sort of like data mining and machine learning and all that fancy stuff going around, there's five distinct classes of machine learning problems in stochastic optimization. So if you're looking for something new to do that's not the usual stuff with big data and neural networks, here's a fabulous opportunity. This is a richer way. Every one of these five have their own statistical issues that make them different. Now, so if you're doing statistical learning, you've got to learn the language of statistics and machine learning. We've got lookup tables with independent or correlated beliefs. We have parametric models that can be linear or nonlinear. We've got the neural networks that everybody's hearing about. Don't get too excited. These are very high-dimensional architectures that often don't work in sequential learning. And then we have the nonparametric models. Now, you've all heard about the big data world. You know, we've all know about the big data and neural networks going to solve the world. In stochastic optimization, a lot of the work is recursive. And whether it's online in the field or offline in a computer, a lot of the times when you're solving something, it's adaptive learning. And in adaptive learning, you've got to learn how to go from low-dimensional representations to high-dimensional representations. This is a wide open area of research. Anybody looking for a dissertation, let me know, okay? I'm running out of years. I need more students. I don't have enough here at Princeton. So let's go to, let me walk through the four classes of policies and give them, you know, a quickie overview. So I'm going to give an actual example of each of the four classes and then end with a hybrid. So first one, PFAs. So my simplest PFA is an energy storage problem. Maybe not everybody is aware, but the electricity prices are highly volatile, and they can even be negative. And so what you're going to do is a basic policy is what we call buy low, sell high. So if the price goes below one number, we buy and we store energy in the battery. If it goes above another number, we sell. Challenge is to figure out what those numbers are. So what we're going to do is here's our policy for buy low, sell high. below is a simulation. You can see energy and storage. Down low is the prices. Every time the price spikes up, the amount of energy in our battery drops down. Here's how we have to optimize over the policy. So now instead of maximizing over policy pi, I'm maximizing over thetas. These are the parameters for the policy. Now, my buy low, sell high may not be optimal. I'm not saying it's optimal. I'm just saying I think it's pretty good. And I'm going to optimize within a class, which is, by the way, this is what happens most of the time. So we have a charge level, a discharge level. I can try a combination of charge discharge. I will probably get a noisy observation. This noisy observation can be from a simulator, or maybe I just observe it in the field. Okay? And so now I need to use algorithms to find the best value of theta to search for that red hot spot there. CFAs. Now, there's a lot of different CFAs. I'm going to pick one in particular. Okay, so believe it or not, a good OR guy, I actually did spend a few years optimizing material science problems. So these were seven types of materials, but if you'd like, if you're more comfortable with health applications, think of them as seven different drugs in two different groups. My materials here, four of them have iron, that's the Fe. Three of them have nickel, that's the Ni. These are correlated beliefs where if I try one, I learn something about something I haven't tried. And this happens all the time. So what I'm going to do is I have an initial belief about how well each of these will perform. Let's say I run an experiment with the rightmost one. I don't even know how to pronounce that. And I get a noisy observation where I update the belief. But because of the correlations, I'm actually going to update all of the beliefs. Now, how do I decide how to run experiments? By the way, I've got problems here where we have a dozen or two dozen of these materials, and I've seen people say, well, I've got 1,000 of these. So here are different policies. Upper confidence bounding is very popular in computer science. Interval estimation dates back to the 1990s. Boltzmann exploration. Let me talk about interval estimation. So this is one where I'm going to take each of my different materials. My expected performance is mu bar, and that's my belief as of n experiments. Now, that sigma bar is going to be my standard deviation of mu bar, which means if I try material X over and over and over and over again, that sigma bar is going to go to zero. Now, look at what I'm doing. I'd like to try the one that's best, the highest mu bar. But I'm also looking at how uncertain I am. That's the sigma bar. And I'd like to try something that looks pretty good, but I also like things that have a lot of uncertainty. Now, how important is the uncertainty? That's where the tunable parameter comes in, the theta IE. Now, notice that there's an argmax. That's what makes it. So I don't look in the future. I'm just reacting to what I know now. This is what makes it a cost function approximation. I have an embedded min or max. I don't have any explicit attempt to look in the future, but you guaranteed you have a tunable parameter. So let's take my beliefs, and let's say the tunable parameter is equal to zero. Well, that means what I'm going to do is just look at the expected value of how well everything works. Well, what if I set that tunable parameter to 2, which means now I'm going to look at roughly the 95th percentile. Now, instead of the one that's third from the right, that used to be looked the best. Now I'm going to do the one that's farthest to the right because its 95th percentile is the highest. So the thing is, what should that tunable parameter be? Well, now I've got to do just what I did with my energy storage problem. I have to tune that parameter. And the graph there is regret. So smaller is better at the least regret. And I'm comparing against one of my look-ahead policies called knowledge gradient. Knowledge gradient was a much more sophisticated policy. That's from my optimal learning book. And I actually had experiments where this very, very simple, trivial interval estimation policy was beating us. And I was like, wait a minute, how can this be? Yes, but you have to tune it. So properly tuned, these very simple policies can work astonishingly well. I can guarantee you that KG policy is way harder to compute, harder to understand. You need a better background. The thing is with the interval estimation policy, you do have to tuning, and the tuning matters. Okay. Let me just briefly mention how popular cost function approximations are. So airlines that optimize under uncertainty, they'll say, well, we're doing deterministic optimization. Yeah, but they're putting in schedule slack. And they're putting in schedule slack to handle the weather uncertainty. This is a form of stochastic optimization. Manufacturers using buffer inventories. That buffer inventory is a tunable parameter. Grid operators, when they plan for how much energy is going to be running tomorrow, they have to put in a buffer because one of the generators might go out. And every time you use Google Maps and add on 10 minutes to figure out when you're going to leave, well, you've just done the same thing. You did a deterministic problem with a tunable parameter. So let's move on to the VFA. So this just gets a little bit more complicated, has attracted a lot more attention to the academic community, such as me. So if you come from operations research, you may not have heard of Q-learning, but if you've ever heard the phrase reinforcement learning, reinforcement learning, invented by Andy Bartow and Rich Sutton, this is reinforcement learning. It's these two equations. You're in a state, you pick an action, you peek into the future, that S prime was randomly generated, you use the downstream estimates, the value of state action pairs, to get a Q hat, and the smooth Q hat goes into a Q bar. Now, this logic does not work if A is a vector or continuous. And by the way, the state space can't be too big either. But this is the basis of AlphaGo Zero. So in other words, they're starting to do some cool stuff with this. But if that action A is a vector, hey, let's go to blood management, where I haven't actually, you know, it's not a huge vector, but it'll end up having several hundred dimensions. So let's assume that you have an initial set of supplies demands of blood. You have to make a decision of what blood to assign to each patient. Now you're going to get new blood donations, the R hat. You're going to get new patients calling in with operators.